Evening, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to tonight's August 13th regular Othello City Council meeting. And I'd like you all to please rise for a short private invocation, asking for God's blessing upon this community and wisdom for the council as we make our decisions tonight. And now, if you'll please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated. Item 1.4 on our agenda is roll call, and all members are present. And item 1.5 is citizen input. That's the segment of the council meeting where any citizen has the opportunity to address the city council. If you are here to address either of our public hearings on the off-street parking or accessory dwelling units, you will have time during that public hearing to make your comments known. So is there anybody here who would like to address the city council?
Okay.
Yes, you will have opportunity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Hearing none, we'll move to approval of our agenda tonight.
Make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll move to item 3, our consent agenda. Entertain a motion to approve tonight's consent.
Motion.
Thank you.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. And now we'll move to item 4.1, public hearing on amending the OMC chapter 17.61, titled off-street parking. And I will open that public hearing at 6:32 p.m. And our community development director, Ann Henning, will give a staff report.
So this was part of the update of the zoning code that the Planning Commission is working on. Parking standards have not been updated in a long time, so we took a good look at those. I've listed out for you on the agenda memo the major points that were changed. I don't know if you want me to go through them or...
Would you please?
Okay. So the very first part was pretty much what was there already, but just kind of reformatting it. It was just one long paragraph before, put in some bullets and added some clarity to it. So then the next major change would be that the Planning Commission recommended that if the street was unpaved, that the parking could be unpaved, could be gravel. So that would be something you'd want to think about. They increased the size, the minimum size of the parking space from 8.5 by 18 to 9 by 20. Works a little better with the larger vehicles that many people have. That size would also apply within a garage, is a change that they proposed. And then E is, would be not allowing backing out onto a street for a commercial use or a multifamily larger than 4 units. So it wouldn't apply to up to a fourplex, but larger than that would prevent someone backing up directly onto a street. Next change was for high schools, for any school, increasing the amount for an auditorium from 1 space per 12 seats to 1 for 6, and then adding additional parking for a high school, since high school students, many of them would drive to school. Next major change would be for retail stores and personal service shops. This one was kind of an odd one in the past, where it had total parking area size compared to the building size. So including the drive aisles, including everything, and that's a really hard thing to make it make sense. And so that one is going just to number of spaces per square foot lot easier to calculate. Restaurants before was based on number of chairs, which is very easy to change, and so this would be based on the size, actually per square foot again, like all the rest of the standards. There were some changes to, rather than taking things to the Planning Commission, taking them to staff, mostly Community Development Director, in some cases Public Works Director, depending on what it was. Adding in the requirement that spaces in a parking lot be striped. There's no currently no requirement that they be striped. Adding in the minimum aisle width, with different aisles. If it's one-way traffic, if it's an angle, you need a narrow aisle, and if it's two-way, 90-degree parking. Updating the accessibility language. So those would be the major changes, except that I know that I skipped one that you would be very interested in. For residential, proposal would be that a carport would be the equivalent of a garage, and that that would only be required for single-family dwellings, not for duplexes. So that may be something you'd want to discuss as well.
Okay, Council, do you guys have any clarifying questions for Ann?
Just one.
Mm-hmm.
It was something I ran across. It's because it's in the motion memo, the agenda memo. Item number 9 of the agenda memo, clarification that asphalt and concrete is required and that stormwater must be addressed in compliance with the state standards. And then again, it says it in required improvements and maintenance of parking area in the ordinance 17.61.060, item 1, in compliance with the Eastern Washington Stormwater Manual. So we have done some things with businesses in town that have redone their parking lots and repaved, mm-hmm. and we have allowed them to connect to the city stormwater system, which I'm in full agreement with. Because of capacity reasons, we have more space in our system than what is being utilized. So this will not deter that in any way. I just want to make sure that because we're requiring them, if they're going to do resurfacing or if they're going to do something to improve their parking in a retail setting or a hotel setting, that we look at that helping, you know, get mm-hmm. it connected to this to the city stormwater system, or at least provide that as a means to deal with it. Otherwise,
right.
they got to take space away from what they have currently, build a swell, and redirect everything to that swell. And I don't think that's necessary. Not if there's stormwater mm-hmm. capacity in.
Yeah, so there should be some clarifying language in that that would allow that connection.
Something to say through a variance with the city.
I don't even know if you want a variance, but if the connection is to the city system is allowed, just. And yeah, where I'm not being able to come up with something that
you understand what I'm
I
saying.
I know what you're saying exactly, but I just don't know how to put it in words that you could adopt right this minute.
Okay, so if we could move forward and make a motion on this, it would be with the stipulation that we correct that to amend it. That's all I've got.
Does anybody else have any clarifying questions for Ann?
I just have a comment. They're not questions, but they're comments. You want to wait until later for those?
You can give your comments now. You guys may need to also consider when the public testifies that you might want to respond as well. So, but go ahead.
So, my comments are on the 117.61.010 for the unpaved streets.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why you want to go ahead and let them have unpaved parking spaces. The odds are that eventually that street's going to be paved. So now we're sitting up there with an unpaved parking lot that they're going to have to fix in the future potentially, rather than just having it done now instead of later.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that one.
Well, either that or there would have to be a stipulation in there that it, when the street is paved, they have to pave their parking lot at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
See, and that's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Do it now rather than have to come up with that expense later.
Yeah.
The other thing is I don't believe carports are the same as garages. They're not anywhere close. And just one other thing would be up under 176110, back to the MP, part of that says that it has to be paved if it enters the valley. If that entrance is off an alley. One of the things I'd like to see in there too is those parking setbacks further back in an alley. It's kind of, you need to go through the alley and see what these parking places are like. Some of them are just absolutely horrible. There's not enough space in there. And even at 20 feet, you get a large pickup in there,
mm-hmm.
and that's still sticking out into the alley. That makes it hard for garbage trucks to get through, ambulances, fire trucks. Even work crews, Avista, or any of the other utilities. So I'd really like to see that set back further than 20 feet.
So for alleys specifically?
Yeah. In a street, you can get away with the 20 feet if you're sticking out 2 or 3 feet, which probably should be further back than that. But there's enough room to go around. In an alley,
mm-hmm.
there's just not.
What would be your suggestion for how big it needs to be? Like 25?
Longer than 20 feet. I mean, my pickup itself is longer than 20 feet, so it's kind of, I know there's a lot of pickups out there that's
mm-hmm.
longer than that, and I see it on a daily basis, you know, people trying,
well, you
trying
get
to
those,
park in
you
those.
Get those big trucks with the extra long beds, and
right.
that wouldn't work.
Do you have any other comments, Court?
No, that was it for this one,
Council.
Well, I have a quick question on the stormwater that John was referring
mm-hmm.
to. Do they have to build a swell, or can they put in dry wells in?
It depends
in
on
site?
What the conditions are like on the site.
Okay.
So
that's not been written out on the state level yet. That's still allowable on the state level.
If you have the right kind of soil that will treat
yeah.
the water before it hits the ground, before it hits the water table.
Do you
which around here, it's, I don't know that you have
touch
that
and go.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I was going to say that my one concern with what John was recommending and hooking to our stormwater, it's great. We do have the capacity now, but what happens down the road when we don't have that capacity anymore? And what do we do with all these guys that are hooked up to our stormwater?
That would be something to
yeah.
think about, yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Ann. This time I'd like to open the public testimony for the off-street parking ordinance change in our municipal code. There's three parts to this public testimony. The first, those who are in support of this measure. Two, the second one is those who are neutral to the proposal. And third would be those in opposition to the council adopting this ordinance. So at this time, I'd like to open this public testimony. And if you would, these are for those who are speaking in support of it. Okay, seeing none, we'll move to those who are neutral to the proposal. Okay, John?
Thanks, Mr. Mayor. well, Councilman Everett mentioned my concern with it. I'm neutral to it. I think it's a great move for the city. But the carports being accepted as garages kind of throws us into a different ballgame, and I think it would probably pose an issue in future developments in the city. And we might see more and more of those constructed in lieu of garages. And I don't think it's a good step forward for aesthetic purposes, as well as you know, keeping some of the junk out of the eyes of the surrounding neighbors and residents of that neighborhood. You know, nobody. We all like to work on our cars, but I don't think our neighbors like to see our junk tore out and tore apart. So I'm neutral to the, but Councilman Everett hit the nail on the head for me. So.
Okay, thank you, John. Is there anyone else who is neutral that would like to speak? Yes, Dave Sproul.
Thank you. The one thing that when Corey was mentioning about putting in the driveways before the street, the problem arises that you don't know the grade of the street. We one time were putting in a driveway, and then the street, when it came in, was graded a lot higher than what we thought it was going to be, so we had to change that. So you really don't know what the grade of the street is going to be until the blacktop goes in. So a driveway, put the blacktop in or the cement, and then it doesn't match. Just a possibility. Thank you.
Is there anyone else here who would like to speak that's neutral to the proposal? Is there anyone who would like to speak who is in opposition to this proposal? Please raise your hand. Okay, hearing none. Staff, and do you have any comments about these comments?
Since there are some changes, I guess I would maybe want you to consider having me bring it back so you can review it rather than approving it contingent on this and that. That just gets a little uncertain for everyone. So I guess I'd like to have good direction, and then I'll bring you back an updated draft next time.
Okay. So there were several issues talked about. The one with John was regarding the stormwater. Is that correct? What was yours?
It was. And what I'm thinking about is that along Main Street there are some undeveloped properties that soon will be developed, and I want them to have the option to connect into the city stormwater system. You know, if they're going to build parking lots, and or even if somebody's going to reconstruct their parking lot, that they are provided that option.
And then, Corey, you mentioned that carports being considered as garages, and also John mentioned that he concurred with that, that that was something that we don't really want to go down that road.
I agree also.
Okay. The grade, and on Dave Sproul mentioned that the grade level could be an issue if you force them to
that was a really good point.
It was a good point.
Well, so in that case, what I would suggest is doing something like I said, where that there is an agreement when the street gets done, that then they have to pave the parking lot.
And so when we do those kind of things, and is that done by a covenant? Or is that done by, how is that properly, you know, an after?
Covenant would probably be a good mechanism, but I would ask the city attorney for suggestions.
Yeah, well, I think we should probably investigate that, the best way to require that. Again, just a covenant may be difficult, because we'd have to, you know, you have to do that on a case-by-case basis, and then that human error comes into play, because it may be something that get missed in a review, and so it runs the potential of maybe missing something. So I think we should give that some thought. The covenant is what immediately comes to mind for me, but I also it'd be nice if we could find a solution that was more automatic and applied across the board and wouldn't be susceptible to a pro hoc kind of application. So why don't we give that some thought and figure it out, the best way to move forward on that.
All right, thank you, Kevin. So at this time, I'll close the public testimony.
Sean, also the setback. The setback for the alleys, the length.
Yes.
For the alley, I think it should be 25 because, like Corey was saying, shoot, my truck's 24.
Yeah.
Just my Dodge Ram.
Okay.
And that's not with an extra long bed.
No, yeah, it's a mega cab.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Anything else? So, in light of that, is there any other public testimony before I close the public testimony portion? All right. Then I think Ann has her direction she needs. So my understanding is you're going to come back with a ordinance with these changes, mm-hmm. and we will then consider that at that time.
Yes.
Okay. With that, I'll close the public hearing at 6:52 p.m. and the council won't make any decisions tonight with regarding to this proposed ordinance because it appears there's going to be some changes. So, okay. Thank you, Ann. Mm-hmm. But you're not done. So at this time, item 4.2 on our agenda is the public hearing creating OMC chapter 17.63 titled Accessory Dwelling Units. And I'll open that public hearing at 6:52 p.m. And Ann, you have a presentation.
Okay. So, as you are all no doubt aware, there are a lot of existing units behind houses where people are living. There was a process a while back going through those. We're working on the enforcement now. But there's currently, and so the enforcement that's going through is people were being allowed to keep these illegal units as long as they brought them up to code. But there's no process for somebody to establish one legally, have it meet standards, have it be, you know, a full living unit. So again, working with the Planning Commission, we put together a draft trying to address all the issues we could think of. Which included allowing it these only in R2, R3, and R4, not allowed in R1, having a limit on the number of occupants, because these would be small units, requiring an access way from the street for emergency services providers, would be a sidewalk, at least a 5-foot sidewalk with no obstructions, having a separate address, having separate water connection, water meter, so that there's not a conflict if you have non-payment on one unit that you can't shut them both off because they have their separate water meters. I don't remember if there's anything else. So there was no maximum size or minimum lot size that was discussed because the municipal code already has a maximum lot coverage of 35%. So that would include all of the buildings on the lot, the house, detached garage, there is one, detached accessory building. So that kind of controls it. You're only 35% lot coverage. Setbacks would be the same as they are for the house. I don't believe I had anything else to add to that.
Council, do you have questions for Ann?
I've got one. Mm-hmm. So on the 35% coverage, that doesn't include the driveways?
It's not impervious surface, it's just building coverage. That's the way the code's written, is just building coverage.
And they still have to maintain the proper setback ordinance.
Mm-hmm. It also requires two parking spaces for each unit, so four parking spaces for that lot.
Okay. Quick question, what percentage of our town is R2?
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
Quite a bit of the residential. Most of the residential is R2.
And these are apartments, not duplexes. Duplexes is more equal-sized dwellings on a single lot.
That would be the way people would think of it. The code is not specific. The code just defines a duplex as a unit, one building for two families.
Well, I think if we have, if we end up with accessory dwelling units, I think that definition needs to change. Because a duplex, to me, is two fairly equal living dwellings on one lot that have, you know, their own yard access, their own entrance, their own parking, their own even garages, I've seen. Mm-hmm. But I think that will need to change if this goes through. Do I make my comments now?
Yes.
Okay. I don't. I think that for the most part, I think that most of what the Planning Commission has done here is very good. I think that the R2 needs to change if this goes through, because I think that your R2, in R2, it needs to be owner occupancy. Mm-hmm. Because I think that in R2, you've got people that are there that are already living there that expect it to be single family homes, and that will assuage a lot of the concerns that they will have having these types of units in their midst. I think we need a greater greater percentage of R3 in the town. And that's, that's pretty much where I'm at on this.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that R2 should be owner occupancy, and I wouldn't even be against having owner occupancy across the board. But at the very least, I think there needs to be owner occupancy in R2. If they're going to add an accessory dwelling unit, ADU.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because to me, an accessory dwelling unit is a very, very small unit within a home, or, yeah, you know, it's going to have a separate entrance and everything, but it's basically a very small apartment within that single family dwelling.
Mm-hmm. It does, just to bring it up, it does create a problem for tracking. If you require owner occupancy, then there has to be a system where you're checking on it. So
that's what I was going to say. How are we going to know if once he get, you know, he gets he's well off to where he can afford another home, he moves out and he rents both units, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a lot of work. I mean,
well, we'd have to come up with a system.
Some cities require that the owner sends an affidavit once every other year saying yes, they still live there. So you need to have a list. You need to be checking, did they send it in?
Yeah.
You know, are they telling the truth? Then, you know, that gets harder to.
And that creates a lot more work for the city to try and keep track of that.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily. In certain cities, they actually register all rental property. And the landlords, the owners of the property, are responsible for submitting that registration. So we could enforce that. We could do something in an ordinance of that fashion. And it's being done other places because of the way situations have gotten.
As long as we enforce it, it'll be all right. But it's got to be enforced.
Well,
yeah.
Phil brought this up a long time ago when he first got here. We discussed this. We talked about it. But you can register your rental properties within your...
You can voluntarily do it now.
You can voluntarily do it, which will provide the protection of the police force for doing it, but other cities require it because they want to know where the rental property is in their city. And it also helps them to govern it. Anybody else?
Okay. First of all, a couple of years ago, we talked about getting rid of the accessory dwelling, and now we've got an ordinance in front of us that we're going to allow them to be built. I don't think we should even be talking about this until the old accessory units are cleaned up at least. But if we're going to, I mean, it just, yeah, I'm completely opposed to any accessory dwellings. I am. And here's the deal. I invite anybody up here to come ride along with me for a day and see what these things turn into, what the accessory units evolve into. They're not good situations. Will it change if we set up an ordinance and set up for them to build in a certain way? It might change for a while, but I believe it'll go back to exactly what they are now. And some of the things in the ordinance now as it is, if you look at 17.63.010, on number E, it says that that it maintains a single family appearance. I don't see how that's even possible. Let's see, and under 17.63.30. In 17.63.30 on number M, it limits it to 3 people. And that's another thing. How is that going to be enforced? There's just, you're going to have somebody babysitting that. Or it's just a complete annoyance to the neighbors.
And it's even 3 adults and then any unrelated or related children under the age of 18. So you could have 10 kids in there.
You know, here's the last thing. How many people up here want one of these in their back, in their neighbor's backyard?
Well, that's one of the reasons I think the owner occupancy was supposed to assuage some of those. But even at that, you know, like you said, there's issues.
You know, I just believe that we've come a long ways in upping the community standards here, and I think allowing more ADUs in is just lowering that standard right back down. I just think this is the wrong way to go in this.
So on these second dwellings, you know, on the ones we had before, have we got them up to date with their own meter, with their own address?
They wouldn't be required. My understanding is they would be required that. They only would need to meet basic life safety requirements, egress windows, a bathroom, things like that.
So the old ones can stay with the same meter then?
That was my understanding of the direction that was from the past.
Well, no, because the ones we were speaking about were non-conforming dwellings.
They never had a permit.
Illegal, as it was, a lot of them.
So what do we do with those?
Bring them up to compliance.
I think they should have received a letter that they had to be brought up to code within so much time, didn't they?
Okay, so hold on. Let's stick to our agenda item. Let me just make a clarifying statement that the tonight before us is the discussion and this public hearing about allowing new built accessory dwelling units. The city acknowledges and understands. The whole separate issue is all the non-conforming, non-permitted ones that are existing today. That is a separate issue. That issue is according to the council's direction, has been to begin to address those and begin to clean those up and begin to bring them into the city standards and compliance and fire inspections. And so those, that's a different discussion, but that really isn't before us tonight. We need to focus just on new accessory dwelling units, and the council can decide that they can decide a lot of things. I think this is, you know, there's more points to yet to be brought up. So go ahead, Angel.
Well, that does call for that conversation, because if the old units are not being, you know, put up to code, that means that they're not being enforced. So if we're going to go ahead and allow a second dwelling because the owner lives in the first home, and that's not going to be enforced, and then what direction are we going in?
So that's an excellent point. Excellent point. I was going to make it myself.
Okay.
I just want to address the council and the citizens. When I was sitting through the Planning Commission meetings and talking about this, all I could see, in my opinion, was the opportunity for investment, okay? People are looking at this as there is a housing shortage in Ofello. And if I can use the lot I've got to build another unit, I can make money off of it, okay? But here's the thing, I got to think and have talking with other people and stuff, is that there is a housing shortage in Ofello. People do not have places to rent. You know, single people coming to this community or a married couple coming to this community with one or two children, there it's very, very hard for them to find a dwelling to move into that's ready for them to occupy. What this would do, if it was done right, would create that at a lower cost than to do developing, you know? And it could be spread out amongst a lot of people through the community to be able to do this, you know? So there's, you know, there's the fact that we don't have it, that we need it, and the other fact is that, I mean, do we want to create a monster by doing it, you know? Because we all have a little bit of objection to it. But it is something that's it's necessary in a way.
Well, and it's better to have an ordinance that at least gives us some guidelines than to have nothing.
Well, just and discussing the new build, you know, I kind of look at it like this, and I've talked with a couple of y'all. Even on my personal lot, I'm planning on building a 3-car garage behind my house. I've got plenty of room. I got an extra large lot. And on top of it, I want to put a small apartment. The main reason, to be honest with you, is because I got two kids. And if they want somewhere to stay, somewhere to rent, they got a place. I got family all over the country. They want to come, stay a month. They're not in my hair. Love them, but hey, you know. So, you know, in that aspect, I think it would, you know, I am in favor of it. But we're going to have to figure out a way to get it monitored.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing.
That's where the issue comes in.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, we always want to build for our kids and for our parents. But sooner or later, we end up renting to somebody else. So I just don't want to see some, you know, it get out of hand and turn into a labor camp.
Yeah, but that's if it's owner-occupied, then you're going to be real picky about who's living there.
That's where I think that it needs to be owner-occupied. And it needs to be a differentiation between in a small accessory dwelling unit, in definition, and a duplex. Because I don't want to see somebody building a little accessory dwelling unit on the back of their house and calling it a duplex, and so that they don't have to have it owner occupied.
All right. Do you have anything to say about it?
I guess I really wouldn't want people behind me and next to me and all that having extra people, but the lots that I'm on, I don't think anybody could build there anyway. I mean, his is big because he's on the corner, but everybody else in there, we don't have an alley. There's 10 feet between the houses. I mean, there's no way to even get back there, except for very few. So,
with the ordinance, with an ordinance, that they wouldn't be able to build in that area because there wouldn't be the access for emergency vehicles or personnel, and there wouldn't be the extra off-street parking and and all of that, that just, that would just basically negate the ability to do that in that area.
We're going to get to the public testimony in a minute. Larry McCourty, anything you need to say about it?
I got to go with Corey. I'm against it all the way, because it may work for some, but if it continues the way it is, it's no good. So let's just put it to a stop, get the ones we got cleaned up, and go from there.
Thank you. I'll go down my list here. I agree with Gina. I think we do need to add some additional R3 and R4 areas to the community. The owner occupancy in the main unit being required. I just don't see how you're going to police that. I don't see how, I mean, okay, so let's say I'm a little entrepreneur and I want to buy a house and I'm owner occupied, so now I'm going to go build my little accessory dwelling unit. I pay $130 to $140 for the house because it's in more of a, you know, with room and these little small cracker boxes that were built, you know, 50, 60 years ago. I go ahead and buy it. And then I build my accessory dwelling unit, and that was a really great investment. And so now, 6 months later, I move in and do that again. And then I go buy another one and I do that again. There's no requirement that they stay there. There's no, nothing in our ordinance here that says there's any penalties for not having it that way. What if they just, it was just a sham transaction, just like Corey had mentioned in our last meeting about these mother-in-law apartments that were never really meant for mother-in-laws. They were just meant to go make money. And so I just see that as a problem. I don't see that we have the time nor the effort, because look at what we've evolved to over the last 50 or 60 years to today. We're now up to over 100 of these non-permitted units, and we're going to try and spend time and effort to bring those into compliance. And now we're talking about a scenario where you're going to increase the density of the city, and is that really the direction that this council wants to go in? The other thing then is the impact, you know, the density then has an impact on neighborhoods. And now you have, because right now, you just got to drive around and you can see what is going on in some of these areas. I mean, you go there at night or in the evening and there's 6-8 cars around a residence. And we're not enforcing any of that. I mean, we're trying to. At some level, if someone reports it, but we can't keep up with that even. So to add more, I just don't think it's the right direction. Then the other thing is let's say someone decides that they want to make an investment in a really nice home in town, and they want to make that investment in Angel's subdivision, okay? And they build themselves a $200,000+ home. And because we change our ordinance, the guy right next door to him can build a $180,000 home. I don't know if he can or not, but let's just use that as an example. And then he puts another $40,000 into an accessory dwelling unit right next to this guy's really nice investment. And because we changed our ordinance, now you've got 8 cars showing up every night. You've got a whole bunch of people living next door that it's okay if it's one family, but now you've added 2 families, and sometimes that turns into 4 families. And so it's like, I would be really upset if somebody did that to my investment. I wouldn't like that. That would be really irritating to me. So I guess, you know, I talked to this whole thing about it to one of the realtors in town. He said, yep, pass it. I'll be buying up every single family dwelling that's on the market. And that's what I'm going to do. And I'll put accessory dwelling units. and make my investment.
Well, see, that's where the owner occupancy would...
But I don't think you can enforce, I don't think we have to...
Well, you have to come up with a system, and maybe this just isn't the time yet, maybe we need to have some of those systems, you know, worked out. It doesn't...
Yeah, I don't think we have it worked out.
And have our definitions worked out, our enforcement worked out, our zoning...
What I would rather see than us go this direction, I would rather see the... when we did our comprehensive plan in 2015, 3 years ago, we had a 99.9% occupancy rate of rental property in Othello. That occupancy rate has not dropped, which highlights John's explanation about the need. I would rather see developers come in and build apartments and duplexes and triplexes and quadplexes, and I would rather see that need met that way than I would us going this direction. I'm just saying that. I don't get a vote. I do get a talk, but I don't get a vote. But I'm just saying that's how I would prefer to see us go forward. And with that, I think I'm going to now open it up to the public testimony. So we have, again, in three areas, those who are in support of us moving in this direction, those who are neutral, or those who are in opposition. So there's been a lot of comment. Is there anyone here tonight who's in support of seeing accessory dwelling units on a, you know, regulated basis moving forward? Is there anybody neutral to this proposal? Is there anybody in opposition to this proposal? Please raise your hand. John? We'll start with John. Yep. State your name and last name for the record, please.
Sorry about the coughing. I've been in the smoke of Cooley Dam. Okay. John Erickson.
Yep, go ahead, John.
I'm with Councilman Everett, Councilman McCourty, and Mr. Mayor. All councilmen have brought up some valid points, and Mr. Mayor, it's almost like you were reading my homework before I got here. No Russian collusion here. property values, I think, would be impacted severely. Mr. Mayor, you brought up a great point for somebody making an investment in a single-family dwelling. Our new comparable now has a income property attached to it, which evaluating property values, an appraiser has options on how he comes up with those values, and one of them is the income side, where my single family dwelling where I live and reside would be impacted. So my values could possibly be negatively impacted. On that sense, they could also be possibly be positively impacted. I just don't see how that would happen. It would take someone to educate me a little bit more on that. another thing is the maximum residence being three adults and any attached or any related children, that's just a mess, and that's a disaster in itself. we can see that in the overcrowding of our schools. Three adults can come with a lot of kids. I myself come with four. So I got two more adults I can squeeze into one of those. Anybody up? Right now our police force is tasked with a sizable amount of work. I think our resources would be taxed. I do like the investment side. Mr. Lawless brought it up. Councilman Lawless and Councilman Bain brought it up, that there is an opportunity for entrepreneurs to get involved and to offset the expenses of day-to-days in today's world. And as an entrepreneur and business owner myself, I can appreciate that. However, in the city of Othello, within the city limits, I just don't think that this is a practical application. And I think we've got a lot of homework to do and maybe some more research, and I would urge the council to put this off and until we can fine-tune it and come up with a better solution that answers the majority of the questions and concerns. Maybe not all four, but find that middle ground to where we can come up with it. if we don't do that, I think we're going to end up with carports. And I'll leave it at that. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Dale?
My name's Dale Wyman, and I live at 848 Juniper Street. I'm kind of the historian of the group here. Dave Spurl came to Othello before I did, I think in 1957. Oh, close to there. There was a housing shortage when Dave came here. The Bureau put in 80 mainline squat trailers on where their storage lots is now. There was lots of things done to alleviate the housing shortage, but it never went away. Othello grew. Housing shortage has to do with the economy. And until we can show somebody that there's a profit in building a house or building a rental, they're not going to do it. I should have spoke on the behalf of this ordinance because I have a two-car garage sitting on the back of my lot. And I'd have danced right into the building permit first time you pass that ordinance and make that thing into a house, and I'm going to sell it. Right now, in my backyard, a gentleman lived there that built a very nice wood shop, permitted. Everything was done exactly according to code. No water, no sewer, just electricity. That's the way he sold it. The people that, I'm not for sure if they still own it and they rent the house out, or if they sold the house and different owners are there. But the present people that live in the main house rent this out. And it's rented out year round. And there's 2 to 3 cars comes up that alley every day. So I stop and I listen to this ordinance. If all of us did that on that street, we could have potentially 6 more of these units in our block, and they're all going to use the alley. So we're now going to have our alleys as streets. That doesn't sound good to me. I think if you're going to create the R3, the R4 zones, maybe make it more lenient. I don't know what you're going to do, but create a zone where people can build these houses. Councilman Brain said that he would like to build this apartment over his garage. Mother-in-law apartments are called in a lot of places. Perfectly legal. Only one thing. When you build that, most places, you sign a little article that says, when that person moves out, mother-in-law or children move out, that has to come down, period. They give you 30 days, tear it down, or the city ordinance has the authority to come in at your expense and tear it down. And you sign that when it's done. And it is followed in a lot of cities. But as far as trying to police this ordinance, as it is written, there's no way you're going to police it. It's a waste of time. We aren't capable of policing what we have on the books now. So let's don't put something else on the books that's not policeable. Please reconsider this and do not pass it. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public testimony? Opposition to this ordinance change? All right, with that, I'll close the public hearing at 7:25 p.m. And council, what do we want to do? Do you think we should go back and study this more? Maybe come up with some kind of middle ground, as John mentioned.
Well, I think one of the first things we need to do is it needs to go to the Planning Commission on the zoning. I think we've got, 80% plus R2 in the town, and there's areas I know that we could add some R3, R4 zones so that we would be able to have people come in that were willing to build apartments and duplexes and such.
Okay. All right. Ann, do you think you have enough direction?
It doesn't seem like this, and you said to rework it, but I don't see it going anywhere just based on what I've heard. So I can look at the zoning. I don't know that there's that much vacant land that would matter to rezone it. But I guess then maybe you encourage people to tear down what's there, which also brings in the angry neighbors. So,
yeah.
Well, when you were visiting zoning with the Planning Commission, and they were talking about zoning and where things residential zones, you know, 2, 3, and 4 were, I don't think that they had this in their mind when they were considering that. So if we only limited this auxiliary dwellings to 3 and 4, then they might reconsider on where they, what they've zoned, you know, what the Planning Commission put up for zoning, and change some of those zones.
Okay, well, that can go back to the Planning Commission.
And I think there has to be some clarification on between duplexes and accessory dwelling units. I don't think you want to have people putting up an accessory dwelling unit, calling it a duplex, and going from there.
Well, the code, I mean, if you have a mother-in-law or family member that wants to, you know, you want to move in, take care of, our code already allows for you to do an addition to your existing home as long as it meets all setback and spacing requirements. You can still do that if that's what the true purpose is. So, okay. All right. Thank you, Ann. Thank you, Council. Thank you, everyone who testified tonight. I appreciate the testimony. And now we'll move on to item 4.3, award contract to Beckwith for Farmers Market Feasibility Study. Go ahead, Ann.
So the city received a grant from the Department of Agriculture to do a feasibility study for a permanent farmers market in Othello. So we put out a request for proposals for a consultant to do that study. We received 8 proposals. We had a committee to review them, and we thought that Beckwith Consulting was the best choice. So in your packet, you were given the scope of work to kind of see what's been proposed. The city attorney prepared the contract for us. So just answer any questions.
Kelly, you don't have any problem with this contract now? I hear you had made some changes.
No, yeah, this was the form contract that Beckwith Consulting provided. We made a number of changes, and I'm certainly comfortable with the way it is currently worded. It does, on payment, it does limit the amount to $45,000. I believe the grant is for $50,000, so it comes under the amount of the grant, and they'd have to have written approval to be able to go to do anything that would be above that amount. So it's a good contract from that, you know, very controls your the city's exposure to expense. It has all the other type of provisions that we customarily like to see in our contracts. So.
Thank you. And also the scope of work includes quite a number of public and community involvement, focus groups, meeting with the vendors and people who are existing at the farmers market today who are currently vendors. And so this was a direction that John and Gina and myself were in a meeting when the state director of the Department of Agriculture offered us this money to do this study. So this is just finally now bringing this to a contract, and I would entertain a motion to approve this contract with Beckwith.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Item 4.4 is the Cooley Corridor update. I believe Ken Kaler was going to be here tonight, Ken and Barbara.
seeing that they have not arrived, we shall move to item 4. We'll have them come at a later date to give us that update. Ken Cor, the Cooley Corridor is a group that is trying to expand the tourism and awareness from Grand Coulee through Othello, Connell, all the way up to Palouse Falls, and as sort of a loop, and to attract tourism and visitors. And so Ken has been actively involved in that for many years, so he'll give us an update on what's happening lately. And now we'll move to item 4.5, which is the city purchase and bidding policy. And Spencer, you had some clarifications and changes you wanted to go over with the council.
Yes, thank you very much. And I just want you to know I'm having some internet connectivity issues, so I can't update our screens up here to bring up the latest issue. We'll have it fixed by our next meeting. This item here has to do with our purchases and bidding policy. This is the second time that we've discussed this policy, the policy proposal in this forum. This is the policy that grabs all of the good practices and things that we do around the city, kind of codifies all of these things all in one document. The last time we spoke, there was one suggestion for a change. It was under contract authority. We were talking about some different thresholds that department heads, different thresholds of for different levels of approval for different kinds of contracts. And there was a sentence that was requested, and it says, all contracts approved at, this is under the contract authority section. All contracts approved at the department level will be communicated to council in a written or verbal report. So this is referencing those items that a department head has the authority to approve. This is just making sure that in some capacity we bring it back to council so you can see some of the smaller contracts that are executed. With that, if there are any questions, I can take those now. And if not, the recommendation is to approve this policy.
Council?
I make a motion to approve the proposed purchase and bidding policy.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Now we'll move to item 4.6, personnel policy update.
Thank you. This item is not one that we've discussed in committee or with council. And the reason for that is this is in reaction to changing Washington state law, and it just keeps us in compliance. Washington state law recently changed. There was initiative 1433 that requires all employees to accrue 1 hour of sick leave for every 40 hours worked. And so this would be, for us at our city, this would include just the folks at the pool, some of those seasonal folks. And this updates our personnel policy to include that blurb in there to keep us in compliance. This is something, it was passed in 2016. It took effect January 1, 2018, and we've been doing this since that time because we're legally required to. But this puts it officially in our personnel policy, and it makes it easy for everyone to see and understand. It interprets it for us. With that, the recommendation is that we approve this addition to our personnel policy.
I'll make that motion.
Second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Let's move to item 4.7, which is the TIB grant applications. Council's had an opportunity to take a look, Kurt. We're looking at two applications, is that correct, Kurt?
Yes. TIB applications are due this Friday. We've prepared two for the city of Othello. We've gone over those with the Public Works Committee. The two is a duplicate of Lee Road. That total is estimated cost is $846,000. The TIB applications are a 90% grant with a 10% match. The city's proportional share, if they're awarded that application, would be $84,000. That Work consists of a full-depth reclamation of Lee Road from 14th to 7th Street, and added about 9 inches in the low points. The full-depth reclamation includes the treated base underneath it and reconstruction to its current width. We initially applied a couple of years ago adding widths to it, and TIB didn't favor that, so we're going to go back with a slightly less costly project, reconstructing it to the existing widths. The second one is Ash Street, and this one has come up repeatedly in the last year or so. We applied for an application through Safe Routes, and that was for the bulb outs and some pedestrian safety features based on site tours with the chief. That application was about $800,000. They still haven't indicated if the city would award it to that. This would pony back on the back of that, and it would grind and overlay the remaining portions of the Ash Street between the bulb outs and the intersection and pedestrian improvements. The estimated cost of that was $681,000. Again, it's a 90% grant with a 10% match of $68,000. If the city is awarded both of them, you can have the chance at that time to either accept those dollars and or not. Staff believes funding applications for the TIB grant program is a good opportunity to fund portion of the needed road improvements for both Lee Road and Ash Street. Staff recommends submission of the funding application to the TIB grant program. Support a motion to adopt a resolution authorizing submission of the TIB transportation grant application. Any questions in particular regarding those?
I've got a question.
Yes, sir.
So is there any infrastructure underneath that road that needs to be worked on? Water, any of that?
The proposed sewer layouts would probably go to the south of that. Initially, our understanding was that there was a proposed school adjacent to that, so that would allow additional improvements coordinated with any improvements that wouldn't happen to that. And also, we didn't widen the road, so it's 100-foot right-of-way there, and there is ample room on the shoulders of any road improvements that would be going on there. The water line is
good in that area.
Yeah. There's some stormwater improvements in Ash Street, but they're folded into the recommendation and preliminary design. I think there's also a block with bad water line on Ash too, right? I think so, and it's in there as well. Any other questions?
Okay. I'd entertain a motion then to adopt this resolution for the submission to the TIB transportation grant application.
I'll make that motion.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. We'll now move to 4.8 Olympia Street Utility Extensions Project.
Yeah. This is another project we've discussed a couple times in council and several times in the Public Works Committee meeting. There are proposed improvements and approved improvements going on in the Sand Hill Estates area north of Olympia Street. There was some, the first phase of that project connected to existing infrastructure adjacent to Olympia Street. Future phases will require significant investment into the city's infrastructure to extend storm and sanitary sewer to that portion of the town. And that is the annexed area north of Olympia all the way to Lee, over to the irrigation canal and to the west side of 7th Street in that field. I think what is it, Vista's buying a piece in there.
PGO chose property.
Yeah. So the scope of work in front of you was prepared originally for a Public Works Trust Fund application. We did that. The city was awarded money The scope was reviewed. The city was awarded a loan opportunity of, I don't know, 180 and change, Spencer, right? We then took it to the Public Works Committee. Public Works Committee debated the cost of that and the pros and cons of just taking it out of reserves versus getting a loan, and recommended at this point in time that the council considers approving the scope of work as coming out of reserves and not utilizing the loan application.
Not sewer reserves, correct?
Yes, sewer. So specifically, the scope of the work is to extend the sanitary sewer from Broadway Avenue down the proposed alignment to Olympia to 7th Street. The other work is going to be to extend the storm sewer, which was extended slightly at the vet clinic off Broadway, the remaining portion north on Broadway, and then east on the proposed alignment of Olympia. The design will also include some preliminary road sections and alignments, and that's so we can get the manholes to the right location and elevation. But the project coming out of this will not include any road construction. It'll be just the installation of the gravity lines for the sanitary and storm sewer. So that everybody get that. So we kind of got to take a step back, look at the details. We make sure we get everything in the right places, take a guess at where the catch basins are going. And then following this will be a bid project to install those gravity lines, but just the gravity lines, not the adjacent street infrastructure. Those would be developed when adjacent developers develop those lands. There would also be a proposed latecomers fee for those adjacent parcels as well. We have not discussed that with Public Works staff, and I'm not prepared to comment on what that would look like at this point in time, but so city staff and the Public Works Committee reviewed the proposed scope and contract amendment with Burrell and Associates. City staff and Public Works Committee recommends tasking Burrell and Associates with the work by executing the proposed contract amendment here attached. Motion to approve owner engineer agreement and attached Olympia Street utility extension project documents.
Just for clarification, this is just for documents and bid documents. This isn't for any construction.
That's correct, sir.
Okay. Council. All right. I'd entertain a motion.
Did you have?
Yeah.
So we're getting the sewer done, like you said, from 7th to 14th, and that can service west of 7th, future, and then east of 7th all the way to 14th, which is that whole circle. So are we taking into consideration the land that's across the canal? I was talking to Terry, and we've been in conversation. There's no capacity coming down, just so everybody can know, there's no capacity coming down Main Street anymore. You know, if something were to happen to where one of the circles across Walmart would be sold for, you know, for commercial or whatever the cause may be, we wouldn't be able to tap into the sewer there because there's no capacity, to my understanding.
There's limited capacity in Main Street. I'm not going to go out and say there's not any capacity at this point in time, but yeah.
So that's my understanding anyway, you know, since I did that last development, Palo Verde. So that's one thing, because you can't even tell me right now if there is or if there's not. So that's one thing we have to take into consideration to study before we put that pipe in, see if we have to tap in across the canal for future.
Yeah.
It'll
be laid deep enough to tap in across the canal. So the capacity of that line is going to be based on the capacity of the line in Broadway. And the reason why I want to take a little step back and say there's none in Main Street, over the years, the amount of sewage and the amount of water they're using for residents is going down with the low flow toilets, dishwashers, washing machines, shower heads, etc. So the recommended Orange Book value used to be about 100 gallons per person per day. I think Spokane now recommends 85, and there's been talk of even changing it down to 65. I've kind of kept tabs on the Rock Island plant, and they use about 50. So, anyway, you know, back 15 years ago, if the criteria was 100 gallons per day per person, there may be capacity in that. We're just kind of looking at that right now because we're having a little problem with the forest main on Cunningham too. We're kind of looking at everything. We even looked at serving all the way across SR-17 with that line, but it'd be about 40 feet deep when it went across that canal, and that's impractical. So I think the next gravity line would actually drop down below Broadway and run parallel with the railroad tracks, and we've had discussions with the Vista about potentially going down and using that alignment to get a little bit more gravity feed and serve further east. But it's all hypothetical right now. Yeah, but we're looking at it, Angel.
Yeah, that was my question. As long as we kind of keep that in mind, you know, if we're going to spend some money, make sure we kind of consider, you know, the properties east of the canal.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm sorry, did we have motions?
No.
No, not yet.
All right.
So this is going to, as we discussed in the committee meeting, this is going to be a prepared document to go to bid on for contractors. So that's all this is providing, is the engineering involved in drafting up bid documentation with specifications for contractors to be able to work with.
And your question to Kurt in our meeting was if that was going to be good enough. That because it was $100-something grand?
$168,000.
That was going to be good enough to give to the contractors, and Kurt said that was it. Everything was going to be in there.
Yep.
Yep.
Okay. That's what the reason is for this.
Yep. This includes the environmental, a geotechnical study. Is the tap at Broadway's
16 feet deep?
16 feet deep. So it's the full meal deal, yes, sir. Also surveying, we went over the surveying. Wanted to clarify what the future of Broadway looks like. So there's also a little bit of preliminary planning on what the future of Broadway Avenue looks like. Just with the vet clinic, we hit some mixed signals on what the right-of-ways was, full south, north of south, but.
Okay. I'd entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion to approve the owner engineer agreement and attached Olympia Street utilities extension project documents.
Second. Further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. We'll now move to item 4.9, general sewer plan. Okay, this is another one that has been in front of council a couple times and as a matter of discussion and at the Public Works, I think three or four times. It initially cropped up during the wastewater facility planning efforts when we determined that there was a significant amount of I&I into the city system. And at some point in time, removing I&I is inflow and infiltration. So it's surface or groundwaters that are getting into your sanitary sewer system. And at some point in time, ecology will require you to do it. We're not at that point yet, but we got to the point where it was significant enough, like approaching about 500,000 gallons a day, where we had this little stop period with a facility plan while we wait for the NPDES permit, where we wanted to go back and see where all that water was coming from. Initially, this value was about twice what you're looking at. In the interim, we worked with city staff, and the city staff went out and did a lot of I&I investigations with city equipment. It looks like it's in the Cunningham Road vicinity, the great big pipe running down west on Main Street. It's an older concrete pipe,
30-inch, is that right, Tim?
30-inch. So what you're looking at here is an I&I investigation for the town. Take the data what the city has, complete the GIS mapping elements, and then try to estimate the amount of water that is infiltrating and where it's infiltrating in the city. And there's a couple reasons for that. You want to determine where it's coming from, and then if you remove it where it goes, because you stop it from going someplace, it just goes to another place. So, for example, they've done this in communities, and Mark, maybe you've been involved with some of these projects where they go and figure out where the INIs all happen, and they plug all the new lines, and what happens is the water table starts building up, and they start having leaks in the basements and stuff. So some of the stuff is a little bit intuition-based, but what you're looking at and in front of you there is the INI, basically an INI study for your collection system. This will later become an element of the general sewer plan once the NPDS and facility planning efforts are completed. Any questions?
The last agenda item had a deliverable date. Does this one have a deliverable date?
Schedule. It says it'll be scoped after the 2018 IACC, and amendment for the remaining work will be. Well, I was aiming for the high water time, so right now it's about when the groundwater is the highest, so it needs to happen in the next couple of months. So I apologize, there is not a deliverable date. I'll put, we can add December 2018 from that if you'd like. We have a kind of a window of opportunity for the INI study.
This is more of an overall then. As far as when you say the general sewer plan, that you're basically looking at future, if they develop south of 26, if they develop over here, this is what we need to do to plan for that future development. Is that what you're doing here?
Yeah, no, we removed that from the scope of work. This is just looking at the INI elements. So, for example, if we had to bring someone in there from the cheapest cost we could find to bring somebody outside to just do an INI study and camera that pipe on Main Street was $20,000 or $22,000, I think it was. Again, they wanted an estimated $20,000 to $25,000 per vendor quote. I removed a lot of those ancillary SR, the south portion of it, doing the full comprehensive hydraulic study from it. Until we figured out what we're going to do at the treatment plant and what the NPDS permit requirements were going to be.
But the high cost on that line, or investigating the INI in that line, is that due to size of camera that you're going to need going down that, or?
It's a big, mm-hmm. Constantly flowing, high-rate pipe, and the city can't get their line and see anything in it. So this is going to require, we're going to take a stab at physically doing it with V-notch mirrors in there and estimate. I think with a half million gallons a day between manholes, we're going to be able to figure out where it comes from. But if it's okay, constantly added the full length, I mean, there's a chance that we can't measure it either. I think we will.
Okay.
All right. I'm going to entertain a motion.
In just a second.
Okay, go ahead, John.
You know, in reviewing your figures and what you've estimated in costs for the scope of work related to the infiltration study, why do you think it's going to take $7,000, well, $69.70, in Task 6 to identify industrial wastewater sources? There's one source, single source, and that's SVZ right now, and it goes right down Broadway. We have two facilities that are connected into the sewer system, which run into the sewer line just for restrooms.
SVZ is the only known industrial one. We believe there are others.
You believe there are others what?
We believe there may be other industrial dischargers, right?
I can't read that line, test that line, grass out of that line. Concrete, check for solid, official lab, they would come down the same drain, like that portion.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's a sewer line.
Because they're connected to the sewer line.
Correct.
So it's not an industrial user, it's a R&D building that chops up solids. Now, if there's a situation that's occurring there, we could address that. But I don't think that there's any other industrial users using the sewer line for discharge. SVZ is the only one. And I'm just wondering why it would take close to $7,000 to make that determination. You know, I mean, if you think you got infiltration going on from the sewer lines that are from our property to the main sewer, or from Simplot's property to the main sewer line, which is probably 5 feet off their dooryard. I mean, what are we looking at?
Well, there was previously an industrial survey, and that industrial survey, I guess, went up and down, and I want to say ecology at that time required it. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever acted on the recommendations from that, and the recommendations from that now are not applicable. The thought was is to go back there and redo that industrial survey. There has been times when things have happened at the treatment plant that we can't determine, nor Jim can, the attorney White, and we suspect that there may be other industrial treatment dischargers that are impacting that occasionally impacting that plant. I mean, how many times did the turn white?
Twice.
So, somewhat killing half that first, one of the first big ponds. And we suspect it's coming from an industrial discharger. And we can scratch that if you'd like, but I mean, that was reviewed with the wastewater treatment plant operator and staff and the committee.
The fact of the matter is, it could be an industrial user that's not known to us, that's not being upfront with the city and.
Okay, we're just speculating. Let's go on. We have a contract to either approve or deny.
No, this needs to be done. It's just that the opportunity to discuss this in particular for budget was unavailable during committee meeting. And I got it today and started looking at it. I just was pretty much flabbergasted that we were going to spend $7,000 to, you know, determine that issue. But I can guarantee you SVZ is the only one using sewer line. He'd have to open a manhole up and dump it in there.
And we've had that out at some tracks as well. People have opened up manholes and dumped plastic bowls and sacks and other stuff.
This is not going to find basketballs. Just for clarification.
I don't think that it qualifies an industrial user anyway.
Sorry, I was getting a little tense in here. I had a
oh, okay.
If you want to strike that, I can strike it. But I.
Well, I, as a councilman, appreciate John bringing things like that up, mm-hmm. instead of just sitting here passing motions when we're not going through the whole nine yards.
I like that.
All right. Well, I'm in favor of you determining that they're, you know, put your mind at ease out there in the industrial section you know, it's sewer lines that are attached to the sewer line. The problem we had was that we had a carburetor in a sink, and the people in the research and development portion of our company were grinding up potatoes and stuff and sending them down the sewer line because it was in a sink. So they were grinding them up in the carburetor in the sink, just like we all do at home with our food waste. So, I mean, things like that can be changed, and we have changed it. So as far as white foam getting in there, I don't know where that would ever come from.
It wasn't white foam. I think it just turned the lagoon white, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use a lot of bleach on my whites. Right? Anyway, okay. Let's just get this done.
So what's our solution then, Gang?
Let's get this done.
Yeah.
Okay. Make a motion.
Thank you, John. We have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. So now we'll go to unfinished business, item 5, and I see that Jesse and Ann are back. So do you want to give us a report?
So I'm pretty sure the committee's aware, and I don't know if staff or the mayor briefed the council on the request that the city's made to Othello School District for a piece of property at 14th and Lee for the new water tank. And I guess we put the request to the school board at a meeting about a month ago, and they asked us to bring back a proposed agreement for that property transfer, which Kelly drafted, their attorney reviewed, and then they put it before the board tonight, and the school board approved it. So that's good news. And just if any council members were curious, they basically are going to segregate a small parcel at that corner of 14th and Lee. And the reason the school district was willing to do it is that there will be some improvements needed to that intersection when they build that school there. So those frontage improvements along that piece of property become the city's responsibility when that school goes in. So that's why the district was willing to transfer the property for future improvements that they would have been responsible for at that intersection, but the city will now bear. And part of the reason that makes sense is because the city has access to transportation grant funding that potentially can package that into the project on Lee Road there that the city's already wanted to do for a while. So it seemed like a good opportunity for the school district and the city to work together for mutual benefit. So that's really good news, and part of the reason we were trying to push that along was that the city's waiting on a decision from a community development block grant for a $750,000 grant for the reservoir project. And now that the city can show that the site is essentially the city's, you know, before we didn't have what they call site control, which is one of the things that they consider when they're deciding whether or not to fund your project. So tomorrow we're going to let CDBG know, and that should be another positive note in the city's review for that grant. So are there any other details? Or
that's good. Yep, yeah. We needed it, and we're going to move forward. It'll also bode well for us to receive those funds to use from the capital appropriations we received out of the state legislature. So then the next steps going forward?
So CDBG typically makes their award announcements in September. I think the city may get sort of an advance indication on whether or not they've chosen to fund your project before that, just because of the loan through DWSRF. The funders talk when they're deciding, okay, are we going to put our money in? Are you going to put your money in? So it's wait for a little bit here to either get the official award announcement or hopefully a preliminary indication. And depending what that is, you know, DWSRF has offered some options potentially for more loan funding if that weren't to come through. But again, that's hopefully not what ends up happening. So I think we can begin to move forward on getting some of the appropriations under contract now that we have that site essentially in hand. That was one of the hurdles that was preventing that. So we're just.
Okay, one of the grants is for the reservoir, but the other grant is for the drilling of well 10. So we're going to need to move forward in order to obtain both of those, because I think the timing is that we're looking at going back and asking for more money in this next biennium. And so one of the things they're going to be looking at is if we spend any of the money they gave us this past year. So if there's more engineering work, if there's more things, which are obviously there is going to be, we're going to have to start to move those projects forward.
Yep. And now that the site is in hand for the reservoir, mm-hmm. and the funding can now sort of, each piece can now sort of, by domino effect here, start getting under contract. We can start developing the scopes for designing the reservoir. We have a committee meeting tomorrow to discuss the Well 10 siting portion of that. So I think it's all lined up. It's
okay.
That site was kind of the key piece to sort of start the dominoes falling now. So
we'll have further discussions tomorrow.
Sounds good.
Okay. Actually, can I do have one question, if that's all right,
yes.
Council. I think one thing in terms of the, you know, the school board has approved the the contract for securing that piece of property. I know that needs to be communicated for purpose of the CBD grant. In terms of timing and finalizing that, does that need to be done? Is it sufficient to tell CBD, hey, we have, you know, the school board voted to approve this contract that transfers to us. City has not, council has not yet voted on the contract, but, you know, of course they will at the next council meeting and we expect it to go through, but nothing's been executed. Is it sufficient for your purposes to secure, to increase our chances of getting the grant, to just communicate the fact that the school board has approved the contract, or does the city council need to take action on that proposed contract in order for that to really be helpful to get the grant?
You know, it's all by degrees, but I think it's most significant to have the other party say they've essentially executed their half of it. You know, it's just the city's half. So it's just kind of guessing at this point whether or not that would be significant to them, but I suspect not. I suspect the school board sign-off is the more critical there, because it's like, why would the city not approve the agreement that helps them get the grant?
Right.
I think in their mind, that won't be a significant hurdle, so.
All right, thank you, Jesse.
Mm-hmm.
We had a well number 3 update last week. Let's have another one tonight, Terry.
So the mayor's asked me to update council tonight. It's just a brief one. It's not much. We pretty much covered last week. But the bottom of the hole currently is at 711 feet, and they run a dummy test down through it today to 630 feet and had no issues. It was smooth all the way down. So
are we going to meet with Steve tomorrow?
I believe so.
Not tomorrow.
Okay,
so
don't stop drilling.
No, they're still going.
Yeah, don't stop drilling. Aspect is on site.
Yeah, Aspect was on site when I got there. About 3 o'clock, they were already watching that. So I watched about 125 feet of it going up. So right at the end. So he said it went smooth all the way.
Okay, terrific. Any other unfinished business? Is there any new business tonight?
One question, Terry. What is the, we had that capital for all the water towers. What is the date on the painting of the water tower out at McFarland on Ash?
Oh, the red light?
Yeah.
It's scheduled for next year.
Next year?
Yeah.
It's ready.
It needs it.
Yeah.
They said it didn't matter. They started earlier, it's scheduled for
19th.
So.
Okay. All right. Well, having no further business to come before the council, I'll adjourn tonight's meeting at 8:10 p.m. Thank you.